everybody. Welcome to episode 664 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
And this is Nick.
And this is another Marvel Chronology episode. We're continuing our Thanos reading order. We're going to be talking about Captain Marvel number 25 from way back in the day. It's the date on this sucker. 1972. So it's even further back than Logan's run was. And it's interesting. It's different. Thanos doesn't actually appear in the issue. So kind of interesting that it's in the reading order. Again, our reading order is from the Crushing Crisis website. There's a guy over there named Peter who created so many reading orders. I can't imagine the amount of work this guy's put in. So want to give a shout out.
Love.
Yeah, definitely labor love. So we want to give a shout out to him. Really recommend Crushing Crisis for, tons of reading orders, Marvel, DC, independent. There's all kinds of great stuff. Just you can lose a lot of hours over there just kind of poking around the site. It's really quite something. So definitely encourage you guys to go and check it out. And we'll talk a little bit more after we go through the issue about why I think this is in the reading order. And I think it'll make sense, especially as we move forward. I've read some Captain Marvel, but I haven't read all of this stuff before. So it's kind of it's a new experience for me as well. But the other thing I wanted to mention before we get started is I told you guys last time I'd have all the details about that Thanos Gamora miniseries that recently got announced. So I think it was, January. I just realized right now. These are old episodes that we're going back and filling in for when we missed stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But this episode technically is for the 5th of January. This announcement was on January 12th.
Oh.
Yeah, whatever. Doesn't matter.
It works.
So yeah, the announcement came down that there's going to be a new Thanos miniseries exploring his early relationship with Gamora. It's going to be written by Tinney Howard, whose work you might know from Rick and Morty. She also has her Euthanauts title over at IDW. She also does another title at IDW/Black Crown called Assassinistas. So she's been around. I know her from the work she's done at Top Cow. I've been on a few different Top Cow panels that Tinney has been on. Can't really say that I know her. Talked about having her on the show. I know a lot of people who know her, but I've never personally been introduced to her. So, but she's really talented, and she's starting to see more and more work head her way. And I think this could be right in her wheelhouse. She really enjoys writing emotionally charged stories, and I think this one will be. But having a female writer on Thanos is going to be interesting too. I think she's going to bring a lot to the character that we haven't seen before. And honestly, when you think about it, you think about everything we know of Thanos, even if you're not familiar with the character at all, even if you only know Thanos from listening to the reading order so far, to the Marvel Chronology, then you should know that Thanos is not an emotional guy in terms of, I want offspring, I want descendants, I want heirs, right? I mean, we saw him go around in Thanos Rising and destroy all of his kids.
Mm-hmm.
So why adopt Gamora? What was it about her? Why did he decide to adopt Gamora? And that's going to be, I think, the question that Tinney wants to explore. The other thing that has me really excited is Ariel Olivetti is the artist on the series, and he's great. He's awesome. I think he's a really underrated artist. I think more people need to know his name. If any of you read the recent Death of the Inhumans miniseries from Donnie Cates, incredible work. So detailed, really powerful. So I think we're in for a real treat. And I thought maybe they would come up with an interesting name. Thanos Rising was, kind of self-explanatory.
Even, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. You could say Thanos.
And Gamora.
Thanos. Fatherhood. Thanos. I don't know. But instead,
sins of the father.
They couldn't. Oh, there you go. But they, I guess they couldn't. They couldn't think of anything, and so it's just Thanos number one.
That's so weird. Especially since they have the Thanos ongoing. At least they used to.
Yeah, I think that one came to an end, and then the latest Thanos I saw was Thanos Legacy.
Okay.
But, you know, this series is that. I couldn't find an exact release date, but based on the timing, it's probably going to be around April, which is when the Avengers Endgame comes out. So maybe just calling it just Thanos, they figure...
That sells.
Yeah, maybe for the three or four people that go see a Marvel movie and then go buy comics, they'll find it on the stands and be like, oh, well, not only does it have Thanos, it has Gamora. So,
as a movie fan first, and I'm still a comic fan, but as a movie fan first and a comic fan second, I know you haven't seen Infinity War, I'm not spoiling anything, but they tell this story in about 2 minutes of film time. Like
Thanos adopted
Gamora. I'll be interested to see what. Yeah, like they show it, it's one flashback, and it feels completely satisfying without being five issues. So it'll be really interesting to see what they actually do with it in the comic era. So the movie is, just, I mean, in the movie storytelling, it's a quick, like, 2 minute flashback. And it's like, okay, now I understand why they mean so much to each other, sort of thing.
So the other thing that'll be interesting then will be how much of the story that Tinney is going to tell will fit with what was told in the movie. Or will it contradict? Or will it not be related at all? Will she draw
any inspiration from that? It shouldn't be related at all, right? I mean, because they have the what are they called? The preludes, which are supposed to be canon. You know, the ones that are like prelude to Infinity War, right, prelude to Ant-Man and the Wasp. But even one of the directors is like, those aren't canon with the movies. Like, no one talked. This is the writer director of Guardians movies. Like, no one talked to me. My movies contradict that comic they wrote that's supposed to be canon. Which is why I still like looking at it as, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is one of the multiverses.
Yeah.
And Earth 616 is different than that.
Comics just get no love from those Hollywood types, man. They're making them they're making them billions of dollars, but I don't know. And that's just Marvel. I think DC does a better job of like actually saying they're separate and different and keeping them separate and different. I mean, in no way is Aquaman at any point in any comic ever like Jason Momoa's Aquaman bro, surfer
Ain't a beard.
Bro Aquaman. Yeah, well, yeah.
Getting a little bit closer.
Well, back in the 90s when everybody got mad and we had the grim dark of everybody, and Aquaman got his hand bit off, and he grew the long hair and had the beard. Yes.
Okay.
But that Aquaman, it was super serious and grim dark and don't mess with me. I have a harpoon and I will stab you. Nothing like the, whoa, cool, man. That's badass of Jason Momoa's Aquaman.
That's right. You've actually seen Aquaman. I haven't.
I've seen That's it twice. You haven't seen Aquaman?
No, I'm not going to see it. I saw part of it while kicking a drunk guest out of a movie yesterday, and actually it was a good 5 minutes.
I've seen it twice, actually. Took my mother.
Haven't seen Spider-Verse, but you've seen Aquaman twice.
Yes, because my...
Spider-Verse is the most comic booky movie a person
can see. Because my wife and daughter wanted to go and see Aquaman, and I went and saw it on opening night. And then, my wife and daughter wanted to go see it. I do want to see Spider-Verse also, but... That was like that.
Your daughter would like it too, because you'd be like, look, there's two female Spider-Men. Like,
but there's
Penny Parker.
Spider-Gwen.
Yeah.
Wait, Penny Parker? They call her Penny Parker? It's not Mayday Parker?
They call her Penny Parker instead of, I think it's a male character in the comics, the one in the mech suit. But she's Penny Parker in the movie.
I don't even know. Well, I haven't read any of
She's like a Japanese anime Spider-Man.
I haven't read any of the Spider-Verse comics. So I don't know the mech.
Yeah, neither have I. Spider-Man. I think an expert at work told me that she's a male character in the comic.
I do want to see it. I mean, when I first saw the very first preview for it, and I was like, oh, it's Miles. Yeah, that made me want to see it. And then the other thing that even added to that, to like where it makes it like I will go see it in the theater, is the fact that it has Spider-Ham in it. Peter Porker, the Spectacular Spider. Ham,
and they give his correct origin in the movie, which is hilarious. Which origin I didn't know.
I remember I remember reading Spider-Ham, like I have the first issue of Spider-Ham somewhere.
And my cousin has the first three. I saw them at Christmas.
And the Pun Fisher, see, he's a shark, and the Goose Rider, and Captain Americat.
I saw that cover that has all of them on it.
Yep. I'm trying to remember the Thor character.
Iron Man looks like a mouse. In fact, he looks like Mickey Mouse, which I found really fascinating about that cover.
Yeah, those are the only characters I remember, especially, but Goose Rider was my favorite. A goose that was pre-cooked because he's already flaming. It's pretty funny. All right, well, let's dive into Captain America. People are like, man, we tuned in because we love Thanos, and these guys are talking about movies. Yeah, we normally don't talk too much movie talk here. We're all about the comics, so apologies
for
that.
But the two are related and interfeed.
They're totally related and interfed. But yeah, the other thing that maybe we'll talk about this offline. The other thing we need to talk about is I don't know if I'm going to make it out for Denver this year. I did like 18 shows last year, and man, it was rough. So I don't know.
Now it's Pop Culture Thon.
Yes. That's
con.
maybe this year you come to Phoenix.
Yeah, if I make some money out of nowhere, that would be awesome.
Start recycling
cans. LRM tosses me $1,000 for no reason.
Start recycling cans. If you leave now and start hitchhiking, you make it here in plenty of time. It's not till May. All right.
What have I mind to spend there?
let's dive into Captain Marvel number 25. It's written by, well, I should say story by Mike Friedrich, art by Jim Starlin. We've got Chick Stone on inks. Sounds like right out of an episode of Mad Men. Duffy is handling the lettering. Roy Thomas is doing the editing. So I'm going to assume Jim Starlin did his own color work, or whoever did the color work didn't want to put their name on it, maybe for obvious reasons here. So I'm not sure how much of the Marvel method was used here, because Starlin's not credited with any work on the story. But clearly we know a lot of the, I mean, he basically becomes the cosmic guy at Marvel, in the 70s. He has a lengthy run on Captain Marvel and then the Adam Warlock series. And this is where Thanos really becomes the Thanos that is now beloved. But this title was sort of floundering, and we talked about it when we covered the Iron Man issue, where Stanley apparently hated what Starlin did on that title, and so he got booted off of it after only two issues. And he got to have full creative story control on that 55, which is why it has Thanos in it, and it's sort of crazy. And then the next issue, 56, if you check that out, Starlin's only credited as the artist, didn't have much input in the story. It has a totally different tone. And then he gets kicked off the book, and apparently assistant editor in chief at the time, Roy Thomas, is like, well, you know, we'll give you this other book that I have that I'm editor on, Captain Marvel, because it's about to be canceled anyway. No one's paying any attention to it, as opposed to Iron Man. You know, it was a more popular book, had a lot more eyes on it. And so I think Roy Thomas maybe recognized Starlin's talent and was like, let me just stick you over here. And I mean, what's the worst that's going to happen? The book's going to get canceled. Well, it's going to get canceled anyway. And I've actually heard people say, don't ever get on a popular book, because it can only go down from there, and it's your fault as a creator. So you should always be trying to get on the books that are struggling, because if it gets canceled, if it gets canceled, everybody was expecting it to get canceled anyway. So you don't take any of the blame. But if it doesn't get canceled, if it gets popular, if it takes off, then you've done something special. Then you get credit for it. So I don't know how true that is, especially in today's market, but I think it very well may have been Starlin himself who said that. But anyway, it's beginning a new era with Starlin coming on Captain Marvel, and a taste of madness is this story. And it's funny because we get this splash page of Captain Marvel fighting against these alien looking guys. He's not even sure who they are. And we get this text box that says, nope, Captain Marvel freaks, you haven't missed anything. We just know what you like. Action. Because if you finished reading the previous issue and then you open this one, you're like, wait, so he was fighting all these guys at the end of last issue, and wait, did I miss something? Did I miss an issue? Wait, what happened? And then we get that box that tells us no, it's action. And another box telling us that Marvel, man of the Kree, longed for rest, considering his battles finished with the defeat of Dr. Mind, which was that story was concluded in issue 24. So again, letting you know you didn't miss anything. We know he just had that battle with Captain Mind, but the relaxation becomes a wisping wish as Mar-Vell is ferociously attacked. So like I said, we see him attacked by these robot-looking guys. Again, you know, it's a little bit of its time with the 70s dialogue. He knows not who assaults him, nor for that matter why, but these are rational questions, and Captain Mar-Vell does not think them, for he is what he is, a fighting man and a superior one. So, yeah, he's not even thinking here. He's just fighting. He's just reacting. And one of the aliens, blue-skinned aliens, pulls out a gun and says, "Die, Starspawn dog." But Captain Mar-Vell does manage to defeat them all. And then says out loud, "That was short work, but totally unexplained. They appear alien in origin. Perhaps there's some connection with my own Starline travels." And then all of a sudden, one of them, who apparently is a robot of some sort, says, "X7 to Master Lord reporting. The exploratory exercise has completed. Results are satisfactory. Prepare to transmit." And they all disappear with a pop, pop, pop. And Captain Mar-Vell's like, they're gone. They teleported away. Tonight's mystery deepens and suggests an unseen opponent. And then all of a sudden there's a voice on the page that says, "Always the Kree soldier, huh, Mar-Vell? Looking for enemies. You ask me, you're just a jinx." "Who? Oh, wait, it's Rick Jones, my young alter ego." Is it your alter ego, though? I don't really think it's your... I mean, it's not like you change into Rick Jones. Not like you, you know, say, "Mar-Vell," and a lightning bolt strikes you. Like,
no, that would be a little
another Captain Mar-Vell that we know, Billy Batson or Shazam. Yeah, it's not Billy Batson, Shazam, or Captain Mar-Vell. Yes, alter egos. This not the same, because what's happened?
This one's confused me. Yeah.
What's happened?
I'm like, is this just a ripoff of the original Captain Mar-Vell?
Now, earlier in the Captain Mar-Vell series, Rick Jones and Captain Mar-Vell both put on these bracelets called the Negabands. And basically what happens is they slam them together and they switch places. So one of them's always in limbo and one of them's on Earth.
Or the negative zone.
Yes, the negative zone. Yeah. So anyway, I don't know that Mar-Vell really sees Rick Jones, because we see his like floating head here saying, "Right, brainchild stuck in the negative zone. What goes on out there?" So he's like, "I don't know. But it's not important. I have further worries. I've lost half my powers." "Groovy, real groovy," says Rick Jones. So again, it's a little hokey. It's a little of its time. And especially Rick Jones here, he doesn't act like any kind of... I mean, Rick Jones has been around the Marvel Universe for a long time. Luckily, he's not quite this cheesy anymore. But
remind me what his significance is, because I see him in a lot of modern books. Didn't he even die in a recent modern book?
Yeah, he did. But his initial claim to fame was he was the teenager who drove the car out into the gamma test that Bruce Banner went and rescued and became the Hulk.
Wow. He goes all the way back to that.
Yeah, yeah. So that's where he first showed up, and he was
just important forever.
He was kind of a sidekick for the Hulk for a long time based on that. And then he was a sidekick for Captain America for a long time, took the place of, you know, Bucky. You know, he didn't really have any powers. Captain America taught him how to fight. So he's always been kind of a mascot. He joins up with Captain Mar-Vell for a while, bounces around. I think that's all. I think those are the main three. The Hulk, Captain Mar-Vell, Captain America are like the three heroes that he kind of palled around with for a while. But he hung around.
I should have had him as a character since the first Iron Man film and have him in every Marvel movie.
Yeah, they definitely could have done that. He also hung around with Rom Space Knight for a very brief period of time, had cancer. And in fact, we read the issue where he got cured of the cancer. Remember, we read that Rom issue where he gets turned into the hero and then he saves all the animals that are falling off the mountain. But then he's sad because the one deer he missed broke its neck.
Yeah, from Secret Wars 2.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, same guy. So. Anyway, here we do see that somebody is watching Captain Mar-Vell saying, "Your words corroborate what my robotic emissaries told me, basically. Your powers are half gone." And you have information which is important to me, and I shall have it. Master Lord Squadron S commanding, begin Operation Kree Crusher, because Captain Mar-Vell is a Kree. So, meanwhile, in a quiet, clean neighborhood at the same time, somebody knocks on a door. We see a man open the door. A professor, apparently, gets shot by a cop. Apparently, that cop is one of these Master Lord's underlings as well, because he calls in immediately. S1 to Master Lord reporting. Phase 1 completed. Awaiting now the victim. And this is interesting. We see Rick Jones talking to Captain Mar-Vell again, calling him Silvertop. And he does have white hair in these early issues, not the blonde hair we're used to seeing him with later on. So,
and Jude Law has.
Yeah. And it, and the other thing that's interesting is that the blue of his kind of cowl seems to constantly bleed up into the white of his hair. And so it kind of seems to cause some problems with the coloring.
He looks a little bit like Quicksilver currently does.
Yeah, exactly. Hair. Yeah. Exactly. But you know that Jude Law is not Captain Mar-Vell, right? You know who he is got revealed.
I thought they revealed that he was Captain Mar-Vell.
No.
First, there was a fake reveal. Who is he?
He's Yon Rogg.
No, that was a fake out. He is Captain Mar-Vell. Like the toy said Yon Rogg, and then they announced that he was Captain Mar-Vell.
Really?
I think. I don't know. It's been crazy. Because yeah, the toy said that, and then there's been a more recent articles about the movie that call him Captain Mar-Vell.
When I heard that he was Captain Mar-Vell, I was like, okay. I don't really see him as that because he doesn't have a physical presence like I think Captain Mar-Vell needs. Great actor. And then when they said he was Yon Rogg, I was like, oh, that makes more sense. And they can get somebody like, I think a good Captain Mar-Vell would be like Neil McDonough. You know, he's a little more physically imposing, and he's got almost white hair too. But anyway.
Well, I'll see on March 8th. You'll see in a few years.
No, I'm seeing Captain Mar-Vell on the opening weekend, taking my daughter. Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be a good one for that.
Yep, skipped all the movies in between, but
technically it's set in 1995, so the other one shouldn't matter that much.
Yes, exactly. So anyway, I'm not sure why he has silver hair here, blonde, when he has blonde hair later, but he's even called Silvertop by Rick Jones, and they only can switch places for a certain period of time. That's another of the limitations of them, one of them being trapped in the negative zone, and Rick Jones is getting worried. He's like, you're flying through the air right now, and you know, if we hit like the time limit and we switch places, it's a long way down for me.
I like how that's written curved across the
Mar-Vell's like, it's okay, Rick, I can fly faster in reaching the professor. And Jones like, why him? Well, because I believe his photon ray treatments may be the reason that I've lost some of my powers. And Jones is like, but those treatments saved my life. And Mar-Vell's like, yeah, I know. But perhaps now that you've been saved and we can get my powers back without harming you. And since the professor doesn't know, Captain Mar-Vell, we'll go ahead and switch places now. So he quatangs the Nega Bands together. They switch places, and Rick Jones returns to Earth saying, dig it, man. I hate to complain.
See, the size difference, sorry, immediately makes me think of Shazam / the original Captain Mar-Vell, where suddenly he's like half the size.
Yeah, I mean, he's
in that panel.
Rick Jones probably would come up to like Captain Mar-Vell's shoulder. I don't know why here he's not.
He seems doesn't way too
reach,
short.
Yeah, it doesn't even reach the waist. But yeah, Rick Jones with the dig it, man. I hate to complain, you understand, but being a semi-permanent resident of Limbo Land sort of cramps my style. You jive turkey, you almost expect him to say. I mean, this is really, really dated dialogue from Friedrich here. So, and he's, why is he yelling everything? Like, look at every word balloon is like jagged, indicating that this guy's like yelling.
Maybe he's like, just like tweaking or something. Yeah, like he's on cocaine. He's like, this is the 70s.
He's gotten back to Earth. '70s, yeah. There was no, it wouldn't be cocaine in the 70s. That was not early 70s. Be LSD, man.
Oh, yeah. That's why he's like, ah, dig it, man.
Or maybe angel dust or PCP, maybe. Anyway, he goes in. He finds the professor dead. He's been shot dead. It's no wonder the door was open. And then somebody taps him on the back of the head with a pistol. saying, "Don't move, killer." And it scares Jones so bad. For a moment, he channels some gamma radiation or something that he picked up from palling around with the Hulk so long. And he, like, the split second turns green. He's, like, completely green in this panel for no reason whatsoever. Huh?
I was so confused the first time I read this that I thought it was some kind of transformation thing at first. Not just miscolored, but I thought it was actually meant something.
And
I
was like, he's totally green.
The Hulk?
And his ear is like bluish green, even. It's just really strange. But anyway, it turns out it's that cop that killed the professor. He's trying to frame Jones. "You so much as breathe out of rhythm, punk, and I'll shoot." And now that he's being threatened at gunpoint, now that he got so worked up and startled that he turned green, now he's talking in normal word balloons. "Now wait. Now I'm calm." And the cop doesn't want to hear it. "Shut up. I'm putting you under arrest for murder." Jones saying, "You're making a mistake. I just got here." And Captain Marvel's now, you know, he can see, apparently, that, you know, they can see what each other is experiencing somehow. I don't know that that was ever explained. But he tells Jones, "Don't panic." And the cop's like, "I got news for you. There's a witness." And he tells her to come in, and it's some girl named Luann who Rick Jones actually knows. Apparently, she's the nephew of Professor Savannah. And so Jones is like, "Oh, she's gonna tell the truth. Like, I'm gonna get cleared right here because I know her, and she knows I would never kill her uncle." And so the cop asks, "Miss, is this the one that shot your uncle?" And she says, "Yes." And Captain Marvel says, "Cool your blood, Rick. Face this calmly." Jones says, "No way, Marvy. I'm being framed here." And he says, "We're busting out." And he's about to bang the negabands back together. But before he can, the cop clocks him on the back of the head, tells him he's coming to the station, and you may never come out. So meanwhile, Master Lord has been watching all this, and he says, "My plan is working out perfectly. The policeman's playing his role well. Phase two is successful." He says, "Begin phase three of the Kree Crusher." So they take Rick Jones into the station, and as he is leaving the scene of the crime, so to speak, he doesn't understand. He's asking Luann, "Why this betrayal? Aren't I good enough anymore, even for an answer?" And she says, "Maybe because I care," which makes no sense whatsoever. I don't know what that means. But anyway, at the station, they don't even take him to like a holding cell. They put him in some rundown office. And the desk sergeant says, "You got a killer there, huh? We have to," and it's in quotes, "question him. Put him in Flynn's office and let's forget the lawyer this time." So Jones walks in and says, "This office, this is insane, man. I'm going nuts." And Marvel tells Rick, "Hey, break out the window. Let's switch right now." He goes, "What? Yeah. I lost my head. I don't know what I was thinking. It's hard. It may be hard banging my wrist together because I'm handcuffed, but I think I can." And he does with the Kotang, and he does indeed switch places with Captain Marvel. And Marvel is still handcuffed because Jones was handcuffed, and you would think with his power he'd be able to break like normal handcuffs really easily. And so it's kind of a clue, right, that there's something more than meets the eye here, because he's having trouble breaking these handcuffs. And Jones is like, "Man, what's the hassle? You've broken through worse things." And Marvel says, "Yeah, these seem stronger, but not strong enough." And he does finally break the handcuffs, and he says, "Now to smash the source of this spreading madness." And somebody pulls the chain on the light and turns it on and says, "Look no further, Marvel." And his response is, "But that's impossible," as he's blasted with a quam energy bolt, and it's Ronan the Accuser. And Marvel's like, "I don't understand. You're frozen in the midst of space. How can you be here?" He says, "I return, Captain Marvel, to sentence you to excruciating death. By the code of the Kree, you shall be stopped," Marvel responds. And then all of a sudden, as he flies toward Ronan, we get another of those pops, and he disappears. And Marvel's like, "Man, things are crazy tonight. What the heck's going on? But at least I'm untouched. Perhaps sense will return outside." And he tries to leave the room. When he opens the door, here's another classic Marvel villain, one that's also supposedly deceased. It's Megaton. And Marvel's like, wait, how can you be here? You're dead also. You exploded like a hydrogen bomb. And then all of a sudden, pop, and Megaton disappears. And Jones says, this is getting to me, Marvel. He's like, true, Rick, nothing makes the most basic sense. It's like the room itself closes in upon me, tries to destroy me. If I can just get outside. And he heads to the door, and this time some like bars of steel, like a jail cell clunk. Door. Yeah, clunk, block his way. And somebody's behind him and says, I, Marvel, your former superior. Says, another phantom? It's Yon Rogg, who is like a military soldier in the Kree army and kind of a rival and both a rival and an enemy of Captain Marvel. Was a rival first, and then when Marvel kind of deserted the Kree and went out on his own, became an enemy. And so...
Wait, is that the character that you think he's playing?
Yeah, that's the character that I thought.
That actually does fit better than if they're using Captain Marvel, female Captain Marvel, as the original Captain Marvel. She's gonna do that. Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
We'll see.
So anyway, he fires his blaster at Marvel, but Marvel dodges, and his fist actually makes contact with Yon Rogg. But then all of a sudden, we see another fist raised up. And it's green, and it's not miscolored because the fist belongs to the Hulk. And he says, only the Hulk knows how to fight and how to kill. And he gives.
And this page is beautiful, page 15.
Yeah, it's really
done. Without the panels even. Yeah.
Really done well. And we get a brack from the Hulk, who, as he hits Marvel, Marvel goes flying backwards. Hulk goes pop. And Marvel goes flying back into a pistol whip from Zarek. another blue-skin Kree, and then all of a sudden he's replaced by Metazoid, who gives another backhanded pow, and then he is in turn replaced by Archon, who gives a Zolt with a a blast from a pistol, and then finally we get a kapow from Namor saying, nay, the final blow shall be mine. Namor decrees it, and Marvel's like, man, all my old foes buffeting me from blow to blow. As each of them hits him and knocks him one direction, not the band, but in one direction, another character shows up and punches him in another direction. So Marvel is just, he doesn't even get a chance to think or catch his balance or figure out what's going on. Because as they all hit him, they then pop, they disappear. And Marvel even says, what's going on? All these, my former foes disappearing and reappearing from blow to blow. And some disembodied voice says, wrong, Marvel, Captain Marvel, we still remain. And we are your greatest enemies. And he's like losing it. Captain Marvel's losing it. He's like, no. Ah! And then all of a sudden, Captain Marvel disappears. We don't see the Katang, but he disappears. Rick Jones reappears. And he's kind of lost consciousness. He's been kind of overwhelmed, I guess, as well, by all this mental anguish and torture that supposedly has been going on. It doesn't seem that mentally torturous to me. It seems more physically torturous, but whatever. I'm not writing the comic. And anyway, somebody grabs Rick Jones as he falls, and they put some kind of a helmet on him. As whoever's putting the helmet on says, Captain Marvel is defeated. And I suppose we may boast now, disguised as his previous combatter, we weakened him and then applied the shattering ego blow. And we see the person that's putting the helmet on Rick Jones is Rick Jones himself. It's like a doppelganger of Rick Jones. And the doppelganger says, by appearing as his double selves, Rick Jones and Captain Marvel, yes, an excellent plan I designed. And the doppelganger of Captain Marvel says, you? Its success lies only in my warrior strength. Let's change our malleable forms back, Scrag. And then you can report to Master Lord and tell him the victory was Super Skrulls. And so it turns out, yeah, that's why they could change shape. That's why they were appearing as all the different foes of previous foes of Captain Marvel. Super Skrull, apparently using his force field power, kind of like the one that he got from the Invisible Woman. Also the power of Human Torch, and I guess Mr. Fantastic, Reed Richards, kind of stretch and alter his appearance, as well as Human Torch with some blasting abilities. But the Skrulls fighting a Kree, does that makes complete sense. That doesn't confuse me at all. But what does is seeing that they're actually working for someone else, because Skrull, I've never seen Skrulls work for some kind of overboss, which is I find that to be really strange. So unless the Master Lord guy is another Skrull, because Skrulls, you know, they're pretty militaristic and very kind of insular. They're very xenophobic. The Skrulls never really associate with anybody but other Skrulls. So anyway, the Scrag guy calls in.
But you know who shares a chin with the Skrulls?
Yeah, Thanos.
Thanos and Skrull. The first time I saw Thanos on the big screen, I thought it was a Skrull.
Yeah, scrotum. Skrull, scrotum. Yeah, maybe that's why this is here. That's a good... I didn't even think about that. Yeah, that very well might be. So anyway, Scrag the Skrull. I mean, really, taking the alliteration a little too far there. But anyway, they call in saying Captain Marvel's mind lies in ruin. And the Skrag and Super Skrull are arguing back and forth. Scrag's trying to take credit. It was my great plan of having him face all these foes he thought were dead. We'd drive him insane. Again, I don't know how that short little battle flipping back and forth like messed up his brain. But apparently, that's what Skrag thinks. Meanwhile, Super Skrull's saying, no, man, I basically physically beat him. And we get a little bit of a recap kind of explaining behind the scenes, which we don't really need because we actually – the recapping what happened previously in the issue. Yeah, you know, we read it. We got it. They did say that they did kind of mind control the female, and that's why she basically blamed Luann. That's why Luann blamed Rick Jones. But again, if the Skrull was a cop, he didn't need her to come and say, "Yeah, you did it." It's like there are any other witnesses there that saw Luann's. You know what I'm saying? Like the cop could have just been like, you did it. I'm taking you in. So anyway.
Hold on. I hear myself on your feed now. Is it cool? Is it fine? Okay. Yeah. I hear myself when I talk coming back to myself.
Yeah, I don't hear an echo at all.
Okay, then we're good.
All right.
Sorry.
So after Skrag has basically recap the whole issue, explain the whole fight, we see that Rick Jones apparently wasn't knocked out after all, as he takes the helmet off and says, so that's what this gadget's all about. Too bad it needed a truly wiped out mind to work. And all of a sudden, the Super Skrull is so mad at Skrag that he doesn't even call him Skrag. He says, Krag, you failed. He drops an S off the front of his name. That'll teach him. Krag, you failed. And Skrag or Krag or whatever the heck his name is says, this is impossible. I planned everything. Yeah, Greeny, but not enough tiny things like an on-beat cop in a dress uniform. Yeah, that cop that was impersonating, that Skrull was impersonating a cop, he was in like full dress uniform, like instead of a regular, like normal everyday uniform. And also, that rundown office you brought me to, man, the city ain't that broke, Jack. So once I spotted the fake, I knew at once I needed to beat you at your game. But I wanted the full story. That's why I played possum. Man, this Rick Jones, he's one cool cat. I'll tell you what. It's like, you see, you killed a good man, and I got mad. And Rick Jones is mad, so's Captain Marvel. And we get a katang, they switch places. And despite Captain Marvel getting beat by this Super Skrull in like one page previously, now that he knows he's a Super Skrull and not all these former enemies, he basically beats him quickly. It does take him a little longer than it took him to be beaten, though. It takes him two full pages to beat the Super Skrull. And it basically happens when their fight brings down the entire building on top of them. And the Super Skrull climbs out of the wreckage. He finds Krag, Skrag. I guess his name's back to Skrag. No, Skrag, too, escaped the building before it collapsed. And Super Skrull says, you mean you fled, you coward. And so they're bickering back and forth. Muscle-bound fool, you've aborted our assigned mission because of your battle lust. Master Lord will be furious. It'll take my full powers to assuage him. And they teleport away. And with the pop pop, we see that Rick Jones has once again switched places with Captain Marvel. Marvel's back in the negative zone. And Rick Jones is standing there hearing Marvel say, it's for the best, Rick. My energy, power energy has its limits, and I was almost exhausted. I basically used up the last energy I had escaping from the collapsing building. So that's why I made the switch. And Jones is like, yeah, you know, I guess you're right. Well, we gotta find the answers, like who this Master Lord guy is, how we're going to beat him. Because I keep hearing the words, maybe because I care. And again, that's, you know, Luann blamed Rick. She was supposedly was being mind controlled, but she still blamed Rick and then uttered those words when Rick asked why she blamed him, those words of maybe because I care. I don't know what that means. I suppose we'll find out. I mean, was that actually Luann that said that? Like, through the mind control? Had she been released at that moment? Or was the person who was mind controlling her, are those the words that they put in her mouth? So, I don't know. Right now, without the context of that, it doesn't really make any sense. But Jones is pretty upset about it. He's upset that he lost his friend, Professor Savannah, and he's upset because a warm, loving chick shafted me last night. And not shafted in a good way, shafted in a bad way. And Jones says, and that burns me bad, man. Bad. I'm getting those answers, Marvell, if it kills me. And next, there ain't nothing dangerous like the real thing, baby. Ain't nothing like the real thing, baby. Yeah, that's right about this time, right?
Probably.
Just to date the comic a little more. And that's how it ends. So my initial thought on, okay, so why is this here? Why would it be in a Thanos reading order? And the only thing I could think was, so it must bring context. This Captain Marvel book is Starlin becoming the Starlin that got really popular, that everybody kind of began to associate as the cosmic guy. He really is kind of the father of that cosmic corner of the Marvel Universe, with Captain Marvel, with Thanos, with Drax the Destroyer, Gamora, Nebula, Star Fox, Titan, all that stuff. That's all Starlin. Starlin created it all. And so you kind of want to start with his, you know, first work on the book, because it sets up everything going on. It's a, you know, the book itself says as much. And it wasn't something that they did that often. I mean, they change creative teams not as often as they do today. But when they did, it often wasn't even mentioned. It wouldn't even be mentioned at all, maybe on the letters page. And so the fact that right here within the book itself, it talks about a whole new era, beginning a new era of greatness. I mean, it's right there on the page. And so, I mean, I guess they figured, what do we have to lose? We might as well, if people aren't enjoying it, we might as well say, hey, it's a whole new era. Even on the cover, which is a pretty cool looking cover, it's got Hulk, it's got Ronan the Accuser, it's got Namor, and we've got a blurb on the cover saying, new, the greatest battle issue ever, every hand against him. So I guess they figured it's getting canceled anyway, why not announce a new direction? Maybe we can get people to hang on for an issue or two, and maybe they'll like what Starlin's bringing to the table. So that was my initial thought on why this book was in the reading order. But you mentioning the whole Chin thing of who Master Lord might be makes way more sense. I don't know why I didn't even consider that. So did you get that like right away? You're like, oh, Master Lord must be, I mean, it's gotta be Thanos, right?
Yeah, but I didn't get until this read through with you. I didn't get it the first time.
Really? So what was it about?
This is the time I got it. It was our second read through. Yeah.
What was it about? You just saw his chin and was like, wait a second.
Well, you said they were working for someone, and I just assumed the other guy was a Skrull. And I was like, oh, it's Thanos. He's got a chin like that.
Yeah, chins of a feather flock together or what?
Yeah.
I've never known Thanos to work with Skrulls before, but it does totally make sense. And what's interesting is when you look at Skrag, he doesn't look... like, he doesn't even look as much like a Skrull as the Super Skrull does in the panel where he's holding the mic. And the other thing that doesn't make sense is the panel where he's holding the mic has curved corners, which usually is reserved for flashback, but it's not a flashback. So I think that threw me off there when I was reading it the first time. Because if you go turn to the next page when he's recapping and everything's flashback, it has all curved corners. But the one where he's holding the mic shouldn't have curved corners, but it does. But he looks much more like Thanos, like a green-skinned Thanos in that panel than he looks like a Skrull.
Interesting.
So maybe subconsciously Scrag is, instead of transforming him back to his normal Skrull appearance when he says, you know, let's change our malleable forms back, maybe he's subconsciously wants to be like the Master Lord, wants to be like Thanos. So yeah, I gotta think it's Thanos. I mean, there's,
yeah, otherwise why would it be in the reading order?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. And I'm going back through and I'm scrolling and I'm trying to see if there's anything that we can see.
His teeth look gnarly in that shot.
Well, I'm looking at the flashbacks where we see Master Lord, you know, just a little. We see him from behind. We're just seeing kind of like a hand. Think Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget, right? All you ever see, you see he's sitting in his chair. He's watching the screen. There is the one panel where you see, yeah, his teeth and a little bit of his lip where he says, Master Lord to Squadron S commanding, begin Operation Kree Crusher. And he does have, you know, the little lines around his mouth. Can't really see his chin. And everything's just colored red, so you can't figure out anything from the coloring. But yeah, I gotta think that it's Thanos, and that's why it's in this reading order. But a little cheesy, and a lot of things to be unexplained, or to be explained, I guess. Like, who is Master Lord? Why would the Skrulls be working for him? What's the deal with Luann and that line, because I care? I'm turning you in to the Super Skrull and Scrag because I care. That, huh? And finally, and maybe most importantly, what happened to Captain Mar-Vell's white hair, man? Silver top. He went from silver top to yellow top. That doesn't make any sense. So, but yeah, I have a feeling as we read these Captain Marvel issues that they're going to get better quickly, because it was, you know, it's one thing to have Starlin thrown into an Iron Man issue and be like, man, I don't know if I'm ever going to get another chance to write another comic or to plot it out or anything, so I'm going to throw all my ideas in there as, you know, much as I can. And then he gets on this book, and I think as he gets on the book, word of mouth starts to spread, numbers start going up, all of a sudden it gets uncanceled. That's probably instilling confidence in him, and you start to see his growth as a creator. So I think by the end of his run on Captain Marvel, you start to really see his talent shine through. And I don't know if the reading order covers his Adam Warlock work. I mean, it's not a Starlin chronology we're doing here. It's Thanos. So, but it's a good long run. We're covering, I think, in order, Captain Marvel issue 25 through 33, I want to say. Let me take a quick look here. What were your thoughts on this issue overall, Nick?
It's kind of interesting as like almost a last ditch effort to save something, like a TV show where it's like, look, it's Hulk, it's Ronan the Accuser, it's like all of them, and he's fighting them all. So it's, and they even advertise that on the cover where it's like biggest fight issue ever or whatever. So it's interesting, but I want to see some Thanos action, man.
Yeah, it is. We will be covering issues 25 through 33. So. I'll take a quick look at the cover of 26 to see if it has Thanos on it, but it's not loading the cover. So anyway, yeah, I mean, I thought it was pretty fun. I would say much like the story has room to improve, Starlin's art has room to improve also. Mm-hmm. It's not really recognizable as the Starlin art you'd know, except maybe the hair. Starlin's always been one to draw like really like long flowing hair. Even when it's not that long, it still somehow ends up being flowing the way Starlin draws it. So I think maybe that might be the one spot, but you can tell he still needs to work on some of his basics like anatomy and stuff. There's a few pages. I mean, I know the Skrulls are shapeshifters, but it shouldn't look quite as misshapen as they do in some of these panels. It's just a little inconsistent. So, but all in all, it's early Starlin work. So, it's kind of a must read for me. I'm such a fan of him. And like I said, I've read some of this stuff way back in the day, the issues that I was able to get my hands on, but I certainly haven't read, read all of it. So, if you look at the issue, the cover of issue 26, though, let me show it to you, Nick, you do start to get an idea that you're certainly correct in your assumption, because yes, it's not total. I mean, that's pretty obvious, but not if you,
yeah,
at the time when this came out, he had had one appearance. He'd showed up in Iron Man and that was it, because that Logan's Run issue was from 1977. So
you can kind of tell who's with him too, based on what Captain Marvel's saying.
Oh yeah, that's right.
It looks like death, don't it?
Yeah, sure does. Yeah. And look what Thing is calling him on the cover too.
Silvertop,
man. See, he's going to have to get a whole new nickname when he gets the blonde hair. You better start saying your prayers, because it's clobbering time. And you know what? Another thing about having the Thing, who, you know, Fantastic Four is pretty popular at this time. That's another trick that publishers would always do when a book wasn't selling. Well, let's just throw some guest stars in there, and maybe we'll get fans of the Fantastic Four or the Thing to pick it up, and we can increase circulation, can introduce them to some new characters, and maybe the book will be saved. So might as well take a look at 27 versus the Sinister Super Scroll. And that looks like a cross between Uncle Ben and Doctor Strange right there.
Yeah, right.
I'm not sure what that's all about. So anyway, if you guys will, oh, accidentally
looked at the War on the World called Titan.
Yeah, we're definitely
we're getting there.
We're getting there into some Thanos love. So yeah, if you guys love Thanos, if you know friends who love Thanos, definitely let them know that we're covering Thanos on our Marvel Chronology every Saturday here on the Comic Source. We always appreciate new listeners joining in, and a lot more Thanos to come. So looking forward to that. So, but again, I have a feeling, just based on the fact, I want to say that issue 29 was the first issue that I read of Starlin's Captain Marvel run. And I'll show you the cover of that one, just because I think this is like a really, really famous cover. So you may recognize it, even though you're not, you know, the biggest comic reader. And you see he has the blonde hair here.
Yes, he's coming. I've seen that cover.
Yeah, I mean, I think just about everybody's seen that cover. It's so iconic. But that's the first issue of Captain Marvel that I ever read. So, and it's really, really good. And that's only, you know, four issues away from the issue that we just read. So, again, nice. I think that now I was, you know, like 10 or 11 when I read it. And I remember it being really good. But obviously, my judgment's a little better now of what's quality and what's not back then than it was back then. So, but my point being that I think that it's going to get better in a hurry. Not that this was a terrible issue, but there's room for improvement, and I think it does improve pretty quickly. So just a reminder, everybody, links in the show notes to go and check out the chronology or the reading order over at Crushing Crisis. And again, we want to thank Peter for all his hard work over there. Anything else you want to add about this issue?
Nope. Looking forward to more of the purple guy. So looking we're getting forward there.
To more of the purple guy. Yeah, and really looking forward to that new Thanos series with early origins. Again, like I was talking about last episode, it's going to be interesting to see where are we going to fit it in? Where would it fit in the adoption of Gamora? I'm pretty sure as we get through this classic era of Thanos, we're going to find out when the idea of Gamora as his daughter first gets introduced. So at that point, we'll have to notate that and say, okay, well, if he mentions Gamora, or it might even be Gamora's first appearance, where he mentions, yeah, this is my adopted daughter, based on her age or how she looks at that point, may give us some idea of how far back we would have to go in order to fit in whatever Tinny Howard's going to do in that new Thanos series. So I think we're going to be covering it sooner than later, but obviously we have to wait for it to actually come out. Again, it's supposed to come out in April, I think 5 or 6 issues. So, you know, if it comes out in April and it's 6 issues, we're looking at the end of October before it's going to be out. So it will definitely be past the point then of when it would fit into a chronological reading order. So, but I do want to cover it. I will be reading it as it comes out. So any last thoughts there, Nick?
Nope, that's it.
All right, everybody, we want to thank you for joining us as always. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.